Welcome into the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Friday, February 26th, as of this recording, and we are in an exit interview. Please sit down. Welcome, Jack Wallace, my co-interview host.
I am very excited to start this up. We had a very fun time last year with our exit interview series, but this year, we're going to be changing it up a little bit. And last year, we started out with the worst teams in the NFL. I think we started out, what was it last year? The Cincinnati Bengals.
And we did two at a time.
Yes, and it was the Washington Redacteds. Yes, and so we did those two teams, and we started going, and we went team by team, and then we got a little pressed at the end. We started having to do trios, got to this whole thing. And so this year, we're changing it up a bit, and we're doing it still in order of the teams descending down, still in teams of an order with that, except we're going ascending, drop down, going down, and we're going to go by division. So we're starting off with the AFC North simply because it's pretty arbitrary. And I just said, let's just start with the AFC North. And honestly, I think it's a pretty interesting division to look at.
So they also had three playoff teams.
Yeah, and this is a pretty good division.
Maybe we're starting with the best division and we'll work our way down to the NFC East.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. But starting things off here.
I'm either looking forward to it or not looking forward to it, and I can't decide which.
Either way, we're going to go by the teams in which how they finish throughout the regular season. So that means that we're going to start off with our division champions and go down to our division losers, if you wish to call them that. For our first place team, which is still funny that they were first place, is the Pittsburgh Steelers, coming in at 12-4, first in the division. And now here's my question to you. Is this the worst 11-0 team of all time? The team is 11-0.
Now let's look at all the teams to start 11-0.
Because that's a good question too. Yeah, seeing like who's actually
that's where you've got to start with this.
Yes.
All right. So it's only been done 12 times in NFL history. The first 11-0 team, and this is from steelersnow.com. Alan Saunders is the writer. The first 11-0 team was the 1972 Miami Dolphins, who did win all 14 regular season games and the Super Bowl. It's the lone undefeated season in history. Then, of course, there's the 16-0 Patriots. So
they were pretty good.
Yeah. We've got the 1984 Dolphins, finished 14-2, lost Super Bowl. I'm not good with Roman numerals, but that's 19. We got the 85 Bears, finished 15-1, won Super Bowl 20. That's one of the best teams of all time.
Yes.
1991 Redskins. their 12th game was a loss to the Cowboys, but they finished 14-2 and won Super Bowl. The 98 Broncos
good.
Started 11-0, won the Super Bowl. The 2005 Colts went 11-0, finished 14-2, lost in the divisional playoff round. Then we have the 2007 Patriots. We all know what happened there. 2009 Colts lost the Super Bowl, and the 2009 Saints won the Super Bowl. Then we have the 2011 Packers and the 2015 Panthers. So I think there are realistically three teams that you could make a case for there.
I think the 05 Colts are up there. Yeah, there are a few
teams
that you could argue.
But you got to think about the 05 Colts also finished 14-2 and lost to the Patriots, I believe. Steelers. But that was Ben's first Super Bowl title, if I'm not wrong.
So then, yeah, I'd argue that's a little worse because the Steelers lost to the Browns, who now, of course, as we'll get to them, we have no disrespect towards the Browns here, but they also didn't lose to a Super Bowl champion or even a Super Bowl attendee. Well, the Colts can say that. So I get there's sort of that not so subtle difference on that end. So I would argue yes. I mean, and again, this team still had some solid points in it too. The defense was number two overall, but this was still a really good defense. They had 18 interceptions.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to dog this team entirely because at the end of the day, 12-4 is still a good record. Winning your division, especially one that's this division, is still a good thing to pat yourself on the back for. So no, Pittsburgh did not have a terrible season. They're not an awful team by any means. But are they very disappointing? Yes. Should they have done far better in what they work with? Yes. And is it true? And now can we definitively say that the argument is over, that easy schedules can totally skew a team?
Yes, absolutely. We saw it with no the Patriots last year. We saw it in Tom Brady's last year. I remember we were talking about at the beginning of the season in the 2019 NFL season. We were talking about Tom Brady's defense, or not Tom Brady's defense, but the Patriots defense, and how historically good they were. And they were, I mean, scoring touchdowns. They were really, really bailing out the Patriots.
So similar stories here. Similar stories and here, really.
Exactly. And then we looked at the schedule. We said, well, who have they played? Now that everything's played out a little bit, who have they played? Who has a winning record on this schedule? And it turns out they hadn't played anybody. And then they lost to the Titans in the wild card round.
So yeah, both two teams that had two aging but still very solid quarterbacks with iffy offenses, elite defenses, very good coach that still was doing what he could to get everything going. And you played in the division. Now the division difference, that's different there, because I mean, we know the AFC East is notoriously not very difficult, so I get the division differences there. But still, it's pretty intriguing to see sort of how these two teams had matched up a lot. And then what exactly is going to happen with them, because they both couldn't really do much in the playoffs. So not great there. Moments. Now, here's some other points with the Steelers that aren't very good too. Something to look for next season. The run blocking unit was absolutely god awful on this team. They were 31st in the league in run blocking. You're not winning a lot of games there. Now James Conner didn't really do much anyway. Like, I know that the rushing attack is something this team is really going to have to focus on. We're looking to look at that in the draft preview. But this was a team that if Roethlisberger wasn't slinging the ball, they couldn't do anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, the offense stalled out in so many situations late in the season. And Ben wasn't really pushing the ball downfield. That was the thing. But they were also plagued by drops. I mean, you watch the Buffalo game. And in the first half, I mean, who knows what could have happened had Deontay Johnson not dropped the ball about four times. So they had the weapons, they had it all together, but you're right, there was a missing piece. And there might have been a couple missing pieces for that matter, because you're right, they couldn't run the ball. The run game stalled out over the back half of the year after being pretty good in the first half of the year. Benny Snell might be the most underwhelming fantasy pickup of all time. Just a little side note there.
I loved him when he played in college. It's so disappointing. I really thought that was going to be a big hit. And I get he's still very young. I know it's been a
while. And we've seen in the NFL that you can go far with even a limited passing game with a quarterback that knows what he's doing. I mean, we've seen it with Jared Goff. Jared Goff is definitely limited in what he brings to the table as far as passing and pushing the ball downfield. Now, I'd say at this point, he might be on par in terms of arm talent. He might be better in terms of arm talent right now, just pure arm talent, than Ben Roethlisberger. But we've seen how far a limited offense can go, especially with a good defense, because the Rams also had a great defense. But when it comes to the playoffs, when it comes to the divisional round, when you're not playing Cincinnati for the second time, in Cincinnati, you're not playing Arizona anymore. Now you're going against Buffalo. Now you're going against the Browns, teams that can really cause some issues for you on offense. And if you can't push the ball downfield and get those explosive plays, you're not going to go to the Super Bowl. It's not a Super Bowl winning formula if you can't run the ball effectively and then you can't push the ball down the field. Because, I mean, a good quick passing game, even if you don't have a run game, a good quick passing game is as good of a run game, but at some point you have to be able to push the ball.
Well, and speaking of all of that, it is confirmed that Big Ben is going to be coming back for next season. He did release that a couple days ago. I think it was Wednesday, so 2 days ago. He did come out and say that. He also has told The Athletic, he, quote, didn't care about my pay at all this year. Like, he's doing everything he can to play for the Steelers still. But this is what I want to know, is that I think he's 38, 39 now. what do you do with the quarterback position? Because if we're going to look at our safest and least safe positions, and we did last year, I want to stick to here. That's one of the things I have on least safe, is that quarterback, we know Big Ben's coming in. It's been together, they as in the Steelers and Big Ben, for 17 years. It's been his show for so long, and now it's I just got to see the clock starting to tick a little more than usual. And I'm not sure what's going to happen here, because Marquise Pouncey is retiring. Villanueva is probably going to leave in free agency, which that means that that offensive line is going to be totally rebuilt, which it already was a problem anyway. And now the totally rebuild could be a positive, not necessarily negative, but with all that going on, what is Big Ben going to do here? And what should the Steelers kind of do in replacement for him? Because Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins were clearly not the answer, but they're also both going to be free agents in 2022 anyway.
Now, I more than a lot of people, and maybe more than most sensible GMs, am a huge fan of the burn it down approach. But not necessarily burn it down in this situation. But at some point, you've got to say, thank you, Ben. We love you. Thank you. You're not our starting quarterback anymore, because you can't. Here's the thing. People talk about last year's Steelers in terms, sometimes, in terms of healthy Ben versus injured Ben. And once Ben got later in the year, he obviously got worse. But I don't know that healthy Ben is a realistic outcome at this point, especially with the offensive line troubles that we've noted, having to rebuild the offensive line, having to replace two veterans across the offensive line. And especially in this NFL, when you don't know when your next title window is going to be, you don't know. You've got to take advantage of the team that you have now. And Ben is not the guy that's going to be able to do it. At his age, it's not a realistic possibility that he's going to stay healthy through the entire year and be the guy that he is at the beginning of the year. He's just going to deteriorate, and he's going to do it very much less gracefully than most of these quarterbacks that we've seen, I think.
So then what's your plan if you're the Steelers? Because right now you're picking at what? I mean, not high at all in this draft. It's in, I think, pick number 24. Yeah, pick number 24. Which is clearly too late to get any of the top quarterback options. So what exactly is your plan here to get someone to replace him? Or is it just wait to next year?
You might have to go out in free agency. Or maybe it's Dwayne Haskins. I'm not a Dwayne Haskins believer. But if Mike Tomlin believes that he can get the most out of Dwayne Haskins and turn him around, and believes that, you know, what happened in Washington really set him straight, and that he can really achieve his potential, I don't see why you wouldn't exercise that option while continuing to build the team around him. Because you've got a guy, about it. I think Sam Darnold is a better NFL quarterback than Dwayne Haskins. I don't think Dwayne Haskins is an NFL quarterback. What I am saying is that I don't think Dwayne Haskins is done in the NFL. I don't think he would succeed with Washington, per se. But I don't think he's done in the NFL by any stretch. His career is not over. He can come back and improve and continue to work and maybe learn under Big Ben. And then maybe he takes over halfway through the year, something like that. But you're going to have to probably work out a situation there unless you can find a good quarterback in free agency. And I don't think the Steelers are going to be willing to pay Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I think he might be living too big of a price tag. But I'm looking at some of the positions on this team that are looking a little safer here, because we talk about some of the ones that could be damaged. But thinking about some things that are really, really solid on this team, biggest plus I got to give the Steelers is safety. I'm really loving the safety position here. Edmonds and Fitzpatrick together is very, very solid. This team's deep secondary and backfield is very good. I know we talked about the defense as a whole is very solid. I know edge rusher TJ Watt, it goes without saying. Even Highsmith was pretty good, rookie on the other end. Not a lot of talk out of him, but he actually provided some pretty solid stats. So got to get respect over to him. But yeah, this is overall a pretty amazing defense, as we've reiterated a million times, there's really barely much change on it. A lot of it's still very young too, is the other big key. So whatever the Steelers can do to keep this defensive core, they're going to have to do, because that's the biggest reason why this team will stay relevant, is keeping them there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Now, I do think they have to improve the secondary a little bit. I think they got to get another cornerback, or maybe re-sign Mike Hilton. They got to re-sign one of Mike Hilton or Cameron Sutton, or else this defense could fall apart. They got to keep the gang together somehow. I think Ben is the weak link, personally, and I think the offensive line is the weak link. So I think that's really the area that they need to address while keeping all of these guys on their defense that are upcoming free agents, like Bud Dupree, like Cameron Sutton, like Mike Hilton. Now, I'm not saying they necessarily need to get all of those guys back, but those are three guys that I think played big roles in this defense last year, and I think that they should be priority in re-signing. Now, they need to go out and get some offensive line help, and they need to figure out what they're doing at quarterback.
Yeah, and that's clearly the priority here. I also would be pretty not too shocked to go see them go after someone like Najee Harris in the draft, because I know they're going to have to get some kind of other running back help. And I've seen Harris has been one of the popular picks to go to the Steelers to be a replacement, sort of in for that, be able to give this team some other kind of big effort on that rushing end. I know a lot of teams have already talked about Harris. He probably is the best running back in the draft. I know that there are others like Travis Etienne that would love to have a word too, but I think right now he's going to be your first guy off the board in terms of running back. He actually is on some drafts the only one in the first round. So interesting to see how those function there. Also wide receiver, I think they're pretty good too. I know that Juju Smith-Schuster is likely going to leave, but the Johnson, Claypool, and Washington trio, I actually think is pretty solid here. I know that Johnson had a lot of issues dropping the ball last season, which was concerning, but they also just picked up Chase, who has been a great addition. I think he was a very good rookie, especially for fantasy, helped me out a ton, at least on that end. So yeah, I would see wide receivers a better position for them on that offense.
And Juju might be out of there, but I'm with you 100%. I think their wide receiver to lose trio him. Is very solid. It's okay to lose Juju. He didn't quite pan out as much as his rookie year may have promised. And maybe he'd be better
as much as this TikTok did
with a different quarterback.
So only other note to have floating out this, some other guys they can look for later in the draft, a couple names that I had come to mind. I really like Landon Dickerson, an inside linebacker out of Alabama. He's projected to be one of the top inside linebackers here. Lineman. Oh, sorry. I wrote that down. My bad. Wrote that down incorrectly. I was thinking of someone else. So yes, Landon Dickerson. Deontay Brown is also coming out of Alabama in that inside line. So they have two guys coming here, but Landon's going to be one of your top guys. He's right up there with Trey Smith as well from Tennessee. Both those players, very good guys. I bet you recognize the name Trey Smith as well, being the Tennessee fan. So there are going to be some big guys. Best man in this list is probably Elijah Vera Tucker coming out of USC. So he should probably go in the first round, I'm thinking. He's one of the best inside lineman picks right here. Looking at some tackles, I know the big names here are Sewell. We'll be talking about him later, as well as Rashad Slater out of Northwestern and Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech. Last guy to name here too, also defensive lineman might be positioned to fill in with this team as well. I mean, we know that Cameron Hayward is fantastic, but they need more help at this position. I really like guys. There's a name, Tyler Shelvin, defensive lineman out of LSU. I think he's going to be a great pickup. Yeah. He's actually kind of lower on the list here, as there are guys like Christian Barmore from Alabama, Davion Nixon from Iowa, and I can't pronounce that name from Washington, so I'll try the next one, Marvin Wilson from Florida State. So there's some guys in here that are fantastic, that are very, very solid, that are going to be big-time players for the NFL. But yeah, Shelvin could be a really great pick, because they're in their first three rounds, first round 24th pick, then the 55th pick in the second round, the 87th in the third. And I think with that third round pick, they can pick up Shelvin pretty safely, and he could be a guy that could help this Pittsburgh team out a lot.
I think Walker Little could be a guy to watch in the second round too. He's been over the years, and he was a big time recruit going into Stanford, but over the years he's sort of slipped down draft boards a little bit as his career panned out, but I'd say his career largely an issue of not having very good teams around him, because Stanford has not been very good in the years past. Really since Christian McCaffrey left and Bryce Love and, you know, those years. But I think Walker Little could be a guy that could be available towards the end of the second round for the Steelers to really upgrade and replace Alejandro Villanueva.
Anything else to add about the Pittsburgh Steelers? Should we move on to the Ravens?
I don't think so. Let's move on to the Ravens. They went 11-5, placed second in the division. They beat Tennessee in the playoffs. We're just not going to talk about it. But they did lose to Buffalo also in the playoffs. They started really good on the season. They started really good, but then they had some weird COVID mix-up in the middle of the year. I don't know if you remember that, but there was a Tuesday night game.
Yeah, they had a problem.
And then there was the game against the Titans that they dropped, and then there was an RG3. And there were so many different iterations of this Baltimore team over this year that I don't feel like we got a great idea of who they were, besides, you know, the first eight games and then the Cleveland game. But even that was a little bit of a weird game there with Lamar's first game back. He hadn't really been practicing. And then we get to the playoffs. And of course, we see a dominant defensive performance against the Titans and then a lackluster offensive performance against the Bills. So what were your big takeaways from this Ravens season?
Well, the number one thing to come out of this is that Lamar Jackson wasn't the MVP level again that he was last season, but he finally got that postseason win that people have been saying forever that he either couldn't do or wouldn't do, or there was some kind of issue with, but he finally was able to exercise that demon there. So it's something that large of a degree of it that he was able to get past, and that's why it was good for him on that end. Also, sweeping Cleveland and Cincinnati was big. I know Cincinnati wasn't that much of an accomplishment. Sweeping Cleveland was big. That was a very solid moment for them too. And then a 5-0 streak to end the season was very solid, despite a pretty bad mid-season stretch. So yeah, this is all about Lamar Jackson. I know this team is still kind of in a weird funk because they were fantastic last season and were still pretty good this season, but this kind of felt like the season that I thought they were going to have last year, which is a decent season, make the playoffs, do well, but never really be a massive contender, but always be in the mix. And so that was kind of the vibe that the Ravens gave me this season of, we're not going to win a Super Bowl, but we're going to stomp on some teams midway through and make some crazy action during the regular season.
Right. And I think it's very fair after last season to question, what is this Ravens team's ceiling with their current construction? Unless they get like a big name free agent on offense that can really make some plays. Unless they, you know, land a top 10 pick for Orlando Brown. I feel like we're currently kind of looking at the ceiling for this Baltimore team, which is the divisional round, or maybe if they can get lucky in a divisional round, the championship round. Because, I mean, you look at this team, they're dead last in pass percentage in the league last year. They only passed the ball like 44% of the time. This was the most run-heavy team in the NFL, more so than the Tennessee Titans. If you look at the run-pass percentage balance, you'll see that there are way more teams in the bottom 10 of pass percentage that made the playoffs, but there are two teams that made the playoffs in the top 10 of pass percentage. I'm sorry, three teams, including your two Super Bowl teams, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, checking in at 5-10, respectively. And then the Steelers checked in at the 2 spot in those rankings. But if you look at it, none of the teams that are really in the bottom half, or the bottom five teams, in fact, all went to the playoffs in terms of pass percentage. So now you're looking at, if you run the ball, you can make the playoffs. If you can run the ball well and you can pass well enough, you can make the playoffs. And you can even win a playoff game, as Cleveland did, as Baltimore did, et cetera, et cetera. But to get to the Super Bowl, And I will repeat this again. I know I said it earlier. You have to be able to push the ball downfield. And they were not able to do that well enough this year. And the run game will only take you so far. So that, yes, they have to upgrade the explosiveness of this offense. And there are some receivers on the market that may get franchise tagged, but if they don't, man, this could get wild for the Ravens if they get in on some of these guys.
Taking a look, actually, a little bit of free agency on looking at some of our least safe options, edge is kind of a worry for me because this edge unit is pretty much going to get gutted because so many people on this edge unit are going to be out. In fact, right now, looking at PFF, they don't have an edge rusher on their roster ready for next year. I mean, Judon's gone and Ngakoue's gone. Everybody is leaving. And so it's going to be difficult to kind of bounce back and get that because on the other end, you have, looking in the further end secondary, you have Marlon Humphrey, who is fantastic, Marcus Peters, who's been pretty solid, and then Tavon Young, who he's had really terrible injuries the last 2 years, basically hasn't even played yet. And so putting him in that unit where he's going to be, and then you have Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott up at the safety position, which have both been decent, not really great, but decent. And so it's going to be what's going to be their relationship. Then the linebacker, lastly, you have LJ Ford, who's been fantastic last year, and then Patrick Queen, who didn't really do a lot. I kind of expected a more out of him than I think he put up. I know PFF has him at 82 out of 83 in linebackers, which is
I agree with that, but he was a pretty real awful prospect. But he wasn't quite as developed as I know. Devin Bush or a Devin White.
And that's why I say it with a grain of salt and I'm not really getting on to him for it. I was just purely on a stat basis, he wasn't really anything big, but that's okay. And again, overall, I don't think anybody is arguing that Baltimore's anything other than a solid defense. And I think we all know that the AFC North has pretty much all has better defenses. I would argue this is one of the best defensive divisions in the league. And the Ravens being very solid on that list. So that's a guy I really like there. Now, offensive line. There's another interesting point on this point because Orlando Brown, I think, is trying to leave. I think he's basically trying to get himself out already. And correct. We know Ronnie Stanley.
After Ronnie Stanley got hurt, Orlando Brown got moved to left tackle, got his shot at left tackle and really stepped up over the back half of the season and played lights out. So yes, Ronnie Stanley is their left tackle of the future. He's one of the best left tackles in the NFL right now, but Orlando Brown does not want to go back to playing right tackle. He wants to play left tackle. And he says he'll hold out for a trade to someone that will need his services at left tackle.
And then final look at the offense before going ahead and a little bit of our draft guys. Tight end has been one of the most solid positions on this team. They have Mark Andrews and Nick Boyle back-to-back who, I mean, you could argue Nick Boyle is one of the top backup tight ends in the entire league. This team is very, very stacked that position. Wide receiver Marquise Brown, though he may or may not be coming back. Willie Snead, who is their number 2 wide receiver, is set to be a free agent. Miles Boykin is going to be the guy filling in the position next year, assuming they don't have anyone else to replace that. But Boykin has done very little. He has 32 receptions in 2 years. So I would think they may want to not stick with just him. So could very easily see this team picking up a wide receiver in the draft or in free agency. They need to get someone else backing it up. Because when I mean that's it, like that is it. It's Marquise Brown, who has been a decent wide receiver, but not really a great one.
He's definitely not as explosive as he was at Oklahoma, but I also want to see him in an offense that's not like a pistol offense.
He shouldn't be a wide receiver one, and I know this team does neutralize him very heavily, but it is very annoying to see this happen because then you look at it and say, well, who else is going to come in? Because they need to have help. Lamar needs someone else to throw to, and I think that's going to happen in this offseason. But looking at some of our picks here, 7 overall picks for the Ravens. We actually don't know what their 3rd-round pick is, but their 2nd-round is the 58th pick. 1st-round is the 27th, so they're pretty deep in the draft here. So for that, looking at it, wide receivers trying to point out some that they could find here. Pretty obviously, Devonta Smith and Ja'Marr Chase are going to be off the board, as well as Jaylen Waddle, I would think, at that point. But looking at some wide receivers a little more down the list, Kadarius Toney from Florida, as well as Rashad Bateman from Minnesota, are 2 guys I think could fill in really great for this role. Terrence Marshall Jr., LSU, also in there. I think Rondell Moore's a little low for this team, that he may be picked a little later. But
I could not see them taking Rondell Moore. After taking Willie Snead, after taking
he's too small.
Hollywood Brown, he's not going to this team. They need
he's a also guy he's 5'9".
We've seen what this team wants in a receiver when they signed Dez Bryant.
What about Sage Surratt from Wake Forest, 6 foot?
I think Sage Surratt could be great too. He's a big guy.
Terrence Marshall Jr., 6'4", too.
But Terrence Marshall could be good on this team, but I think Kadarius Toney is the way to go. Now, I know I just said maybe they don't need a speed sort of slot guy like a Rondale Moore, but I think Kadarius Toney is different because he's so versatile on that offense. He played different positions.
And he's just bigger.
He's played running back. He can handle the hits. And so I think he's a team that fits a player that fits really well in this offense and gives Greg Roman a lot of versatility on offense. And I think more so than Rondale Moore in this case.
And looking at their second round pick for our another guy I wanted to point out, this team does desperately need some edge help. So I was thinking, looking at some of the edge rushers they could look at. I think that Jason Owa for Penn State is going to be a little too early for this team. Michigan. So maybe Carlos. No, he's Penn State.
I'm pretty sure Jason Owa is Michigan.
He's Penn State. Yeah, he's Penn State. I have him on all my Madden draft classes. Yeah. Yeah, no, he'll be gone way sooner. So he'll be gone. Like Gregory Rousseau will be gone way earlier. Zaven Collins way earlier. So those guys I'm not even going to bother to look at. But for second round, Joe Tryon from Washington, Carlos Basham Jr. from Wake Forest, Patrick Jones II from Pittsburgh, and also Rashad Weaver from Pittsburgh, those two Pitt guys. I think that those could be a really solid pickup for them, that kind of range we're looking at. It's a pretty solid edge class for a lot of the guys here from coming out of college. So I'm liking some of these fits in for a team like Baltimore.
Absolutely. So, and I'll give you mine after you give me yours. Give me three moves that you think this team makes. Just three predictions. A position that they draft, a position that they pay big in free agency, a specific player, a re-sign. Give me something here. I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I really believe in the edge, and I think they're going to go big after that, though I think that with a lot of them leaving for free agency, they may turn to the draft here because they already have a solid defense already, and they may say we can just take a guy here to help with the rebuild process and use on a solid end here, because I'm not entirely sure. I don't know if I have the stat down of how good their edge or how good their rush defense was or what they did against a lot of these teams, but like they need help on that end. I think they can go after a rookie. And then something with wide receivers, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to re-sign Willie Snead. I think they may let him walk and may go after someone else just to switch it up some.
I think
they're going to not re-sign him and go after someone else. That might be free agency and then get a wide receiver a little bit deeper on that list just because Miles Boykin has done so little that I think they'd rather have a newer, better wide receiver in than him to pick up in that kind of wide receiver three spot. And then third option. If they're going to have any kind of surprise pick, yeah, I don't think they do that because they really need some help on that offensive line, but their pick is too low. And I don't think that they would trade up for that because they need other people too. And I think they may let that alone some, and they pick up some over free agency and just have a worse offensive line next year.
So my prediction,
I don't see him trading up big for that.
Yeah. No, I think those are all good moves. My personal number one prediction is I think Orlando Brown does end up getting traded. And I think they actually end up helping their defense because of it. Now, whether that's a draft pick in the first round that they can spend on an edge rusher, like a Zaven Collins out of Tulsa, like a Joseph Osai out of Texas, somebody like that, or whether that's them trading Orlando Brown for a defensive lineman or edge rusher, they have got to get help on the defensive line. I don't think they're going to re-sign Yannick Ngakoue, because I think Yannick Ngakoue did not produce very well for them, and he's going to command more money elsewhere for a team that would like his services probably a little bit more. My number two, I think they give Lamar a huge extension. I think that happens this offseason.
I was wondering when they would do that. Lamar becomes
the second highest paid quarterback, and they give him some ridiculous extension. I don't think it's going to be a Mahomes deal. I don't think it's going to be 5-10 years, $500 million per se. But I think he will get re-signed, or not re-signed, but extended, and get a massive contract this offseason. And then number three, I think they sign a receiver. Now, I don't have any specifics on who I think they're going to sign because we haven't seen who's going to get tagged yet. Because the tagging window just opened 3 days ago.
I saw the Bengals already used one of theirs. I think they may have ended up on, one of their linebackers, I think.
Either way, I do think they end up with a guy like a Chris Godwin, like an Allen Robinson, one of those guys, because they need it. And whoever it is, they know that they're going to get the ball in Baltimore. If Baltimore decides to open it up a little bit more, which with a big name receiver, you should open it up a little bit more. They need to open it up a little bit more.
Moving on, next we have the Cleveland Browns, a team that did much, much, much better than they have in a very long time in many ways. But starting it off, their overall record, they tied with the Baltimore Ravens 11-5, though they lost in the tiebreaker in divisional placement. So they went third, but they still made the playoffs. They won against Pittsburgh in the divisional round, hilariously, and then lost to Kansas City barely in the AFC championship. In the divisional round, beat Pittsburgh in the wild card, lost to Kansas City in the divisional round. So almost got the AFC championship for the Browns. Bills were able to get back for the team that it has been waiting forever. They're one of the other teams. So this was a unit that improved dramatically. They had a lot of awards here. Kevin Stefanski, coach of the year, lots of big, big pluses on that side. But the biggest point I wanted to make here about the reason why this team was good, and I know we've been saying it a million times today, and we're going to say it a million times again, the offensive line of the Cleveland Browns was impeccable. It was ridiculous. This offensive line was insane. In fact, the only offensive lineman that you could argue wasn't very good was the basically NFL term of lottery pick rookie. I mean, that was Jedrick Wills, who was projected to be one of the best guys out of that class at left tackle. You have Joel Bitonio at left guard. You have J.C. Treader at center, Wyan Teller at right guard, and then Jack Conklin from the Titans at right guard. Every single one of those names was number two or number one in rating. That's insane. This offensive line had some of the best individual members of the entire league, and put together was simply unstoppable and was able to give Baker Mayfield an incredibly high rating. A great job there. Nick Chubb was crazy on the ground. Odell barely even played any of the season, and it really honestly barely even mattered. Jarvis Landry took the reins. Austin Hooper was great from the Falcons. This offense was very impressive. Now, one impressive every week, but that's a huge reason why this team got to 11 wins was because this offense really, really shined.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were able to win games based on their run game. But Baker Mayfield was making plays too. And in the first half of the year, he was super inconsistent, right? Over the second half of the year, he really started to click in the Stefanski offense. Looked like a totally different Browns team. And the Browns made the playoffs, which is a freaking miracle. To all you young GMs out there, if you want a blueprint of how to build a team, this might be it. Now, a lot of things had to go right for them. But building your team from the offensive line out, from the defensive line out, is how you should build a football team. You've got to be able to control the line of scrimmage to win football games in the National Football League. And this team controlled the line of scrimmage on offense specifically better than any team in the NFL. Their offense was ridiculous this year. And that's even after they lost Odell Beckham. Now, I guess this is the inevitable point in this podcast where I ask you, do you think Baker Mayfield is better without Odell Beckham?
I don't know if it matters. I mean, I guess some of the pressure. I mean, I guess the pressure on him maybe, but like this isn't the same Odell that caught the circus catch 18 million years ago. Like it, because it's felt like that. But like, I know he's been hurt a lot, and I'm not trying to hate on Odell. I'm really not, but it's the fact that I sit there and look at this team, and if you really think about it, would they have beat Kansas City with Odell in? Maybe. I don't know, but I mean, would they have beat Kansas City with Denzel Ward in? That's probably a bigger X factor than Odell.
And here's the thing.
I mean, I don't know.
The thing with Cleveland for me. They had guys over the last part of the year that stepped up and made big plays in big situations. Now, obviously, Odell does not make your offense worse. I don't think that's a logical thesis to go off of. However, I do think there is a certain pressure to get Odell the ball when he's in the game that's not on Baker when Odell's not in the game. And he has so much time to read the field that we were seeing Rashad Higgins make big plays. We were seeing Donovan Peoples-Jones make big plays. Jarvis Landry was as clinical as anyone in the NFL at the slot receiver position this year. He was great. This team improved based on the fact that they had guys stepping up. And then, of course, their good players just took care of business. I don't see Odell really making that swing in one direction or the other based off the fact that they just had other guys step up.
That's true. And that was a big reason why they were spreading the ball around
to some of those other receivers is probably close to the same amount of production that Odell would get, if not more.
And the two facts about this team that really is the most mind-blowing is that out of their offense for next season, not a single starter is going to be a free agent. Every single one is locked and ready to go. And on top of that, Cleveland's cap space, 10th best in the league. 10th best. And they're playing this well and improving this much. So that's the wildest thing is the team isn't even in debt. They're not even worried about this yet. So this team has even more room to grow. It's going to be fantastic for them. They're looking ready to reload and ready. Now, the other end of this, which is something to talk about, is going to be what is the defense look like? Because there have been some good moments to the defense. I know we still have Myles Garrett here. We haven't even mentioned him yet. And Denzel Ward, who I put a little point on. Also, Ronnie Harrison was very good at safety last season. So there's some points in this defense. But the issue is that they're losing a lot of guys to free agency so far. I think they have at least five starters right now look to be out and not ready to get back and reload, especially at linebacker and edge position, because as much as I love Myles Garrett, he doesn't really have much help. Same thing there with the linebacker unit, because there really isn't much elite talent at all in the linebacker unit. So it's going to be, what can you do to help here? Like same thing is even safety. Ronnie Harrison's great, but there's not much help here. And again, you also have Grant Delpit, but you got to get some help in with these defensive units because you have a lot of solid guys strong, but not a lot of solid units within the defense.
But here's my counter argument to that, actually. Kansas City, and I had a buddy that brought this up to me last year after they won the Super Bowl. Kansas City, their defense is made up, how do I say this, strategically, so that there's exactly one star in every position group. They have one star in the secondary, they have one star in their linebacking unit, and they have one star on their defensive line, Frank Clark in terms of pass rushers, he's kind of a D and outside linebacker hybrid, depends how you use him. Either way, they have a star at every position level. I see the same thing happening with the Browns. I think if they can get a stud linebacker in, whether that be outside or inside, this team is going to be really dangerous because of the things that they can do on offense because the offensive line is so good.
Well, you know, the three guys they're bringing back are Jacob Phillips, Sione Takitaki, and Mac Wilson.
And I actually played against Jacob Phillips in high school. He's a terrific player. But I don't know that he's necessarily the answer at inside linebacker. He played pretty well last year.
Yeah, I mean, I just would, I would not argue that any of these players are elite. I mean, and even Phillips himself, 16 tackles in the entirety of last season. Like, I'm not saying these players are bad, but I mean, it's very obvious that these, that no one at the linebacker position is the same level as a Denzel Ward or a Myles Garrett. And yes, they can improve that. And that is right, right, that that's the position they need to look for to improve. And I mean, even going ahead and looking a little at some of the NFL draft preview and some of the players they have here, Cleveland has the 26th overall pick, which, yes, if you're noticing the trend here, pretty much all these teams are picking around the same, except for our final team we'll get to. But yeah, these three at the top are all pretty bunched together. And even looking at that, I even looked at Trayvon Mehring at TCU, Audarius Washington later down at safety TCU just to help out at that safety position. Same thing for outside linebacker, looking at Joseph Osai. I know you mentioned him, Baron Browning at OSU. So we have some players going up and around that kind of area. I think that Micah Parsons and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah are going to be gone by the time that the Browns select. So I don't think they're going to be able to get their hands on them. So I'm kind of writing them off. Nick Bolton as well, outside linebacker from Missouri, and Jabril Cox from LSU are also some players. Though I think LSU, he may be a little lower, but Bolton's definitely up there with Osai. Looking at some of the inside linebackers, Dylan Moses from Alabama, Chaz Surratt, North Carolina as well. Maybe they could be in the mix. I love what they did in college. Both
of those guys.
They're both fantastic.
On this Browns team. But yeah, they're in such a fortunate position because they're bringing back everyone on their offense. They're getting Odell Beckham back. They still have Austin Hooper. They really don't have any holes necessarily on their offense. And if anything, they have a little bit of a surplus having David Njoku sitting in the wings behind Austin Hooper. So you don't really have to do anything to address the offense. How are you going to address the defense? That is the one question they have to answer this offseason, and that is a blessing. Because for the Titans, you look at the Titans, they have to figure out how to bring back Corey Davis. They have to figure out how to bring back Jonnu Smith. They have to figure out if they want to bring back Jayon Brown on the other side of the ball. And they have to figure out how to make both sides of the ball better. Whereas Cleveland is in such a comfortable position, only having to address one side of the ball and having enough cap space to do it. I think JJ Watt is my bold prediction. I don't think they'll get him, but I think they will be
in. There's been a lot of talk.
Final running. I think at some point you were going to hear that the Browns like have a deal done with JJ Watt.
So then where's he going to go? If he
goes there. I don't have a prediction for that yet. My original prediction was the Steelers, but 15 teams have reached out to him.
I mean, yeah, I would assume that basically everybody who has any sort of position at that point would want him. So I can see that being pretty clear. So finally, we can move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, our worst team on this list, but not the team with the least amount of hope in the league. Last year, this team needed a lot of help desperately. This year, they still need a lot of help, but not as much, because it turns out that picking Joe Burrow at number one overall was indeed worth it. Now, of course, he did get injured very soon on, didn't end up helping the team a lot because of that. So there was that, though we know the reason why, and we'll get there. This team was 4-11-1. They did manage to tie a game. They finished, of course, last in the division with no playoff appearance. Big moments here, I think, really loved with the team. They beat the Titans and the Steelers, which if you would have told me preseason that would happen, I would have laughed. So good for you, Bengals, to get two wins against teams that actually that matters if you beat them. Burrow also threw for 300 yards plus and half of his appearances through his first 10 games that he played, which is pretty impressive considering that he had basically no help. And yeah, his torn ACL did derail the season pretty hard. It's actually rumored that he might not even be able to start week one in 2021, which is a little worrisome to see that, but hopefully he'll be back and ready to go. But the big point here about the Cincinnati Bengals that we've all heard before, and I'm going to say it again, is this offensive line was absolutely god-awful. It was the inverse of Cleveland, if you want to talk about how good they were. They were the 30th ranked overall offensive line, which was just gross to look at. This team was awful at the O-line position. The only player that I will argue was half decent at all was a guy like Trey Hopkins or Jonah Williams, were both decent. They weren't awful in their rating. And that was at center and left tackle, respectively. But yeah, this was just a really, really rough time for this team. But they're getting there. I think that there are players here that can get them there.
And I just don't even know where to evaluate this offense because the offensive line is so bad. That's the thing. It was hard to watch. Where do you start with evaluating this offense? The offensive line was so bad. There's nothing that Joe Burrow could do. He's running for his life on every play.
You had to blow it up. You have to blow it up.
You have to blow it up. And if you don't get Penei Sewell in this draft, you might have to trade the Dolphins up for him. Because I don't think, personally, do you think Ja'Marr Chase would go at number four? I don't think Ja'Marr Chase would go at number four.
I do think that the Bengals will look for a wide receiver because I think they do need it. And I do. Okay, the reason why I argue that they do is because you're going to have a guy like AJ Green be gone soon. And AJ Green
didn't do anything last year.
No, I know.
500 yards and played in all 16 games.
No, I know. I'm saying he's basically irrelevant anyway. But you have Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, and you're going to want to have a guy to come back in there because there was zero deep passing attack on this team. Absolutely zero. You know what the completion rate was on deep balls here?
Well, I'll
20%. 20.
All I'm trying to say is that it's pretty hard to push the ball down the field when you don't have any time in the pocket.
That's true. And again, I'm not saying, again, note on this point too, I'm not saying that their priority is to get that kind of third receiver option. I'm just saying I think that would be big for them to get in the offseason, and I do think that should be on their list. Obviously, their priority is to fix the offensive line, and I do think that even at tight end, it should be helped. I don't even think Sample is very good either. I think tight end needs to be improved. I mean, I just think overall receivers aren't particularly great. Now, I do think that T. Higgins was decent last year. I've never really had anything against Tyler Boyd either, but it's very obvious these guys are not elite receivers by any means. Now, Joe Mixon did do a decent job with this team when he was available. I know he had some on and off weeks, and also the fact that he should be in jail, but there are a lot of different units on that on the offense that need to be sort of worked around. Now, looking at the defense here, defense overall is a complete shambles. I mean, God, I'm looking at the ratings on this, and it's just hard to even look at. Now, the one thing that I will give the defense is that Jesse Bates is one of the most underrated players in the NFL. Absolutely. And I will make that claim. 100%. Jesse Bates is one of the most underrated players in the entire NFL. He is the number one safety in terms of every kind of rating. He is absolutely fantastic. Absolutely love him, and he needs to be the anchor that Stevens worked around because he's so young. Now, I do think the team needs to get rid of Geno Atkins on that list. Geno Atkins, it could save $10 million by getting rid of him there. I think that would be good to get him out of the way. And
he's gone.
Yeah, you need to get him out of there. And the overall defense, they're just not very good. There are a lot of mediocre players. So you have Sam Hubbard, DJ Reader on that defensive line. Even at linebacker, Jermaine Pratt, Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis Gibb. I guess Darius Phillips is decent at cornerback. He had a decent year. I mean, there's just not really much to say here, and the defense needs to get helped out. But the one thing with linebacker I will make on this is that the Bengals spent 3 picks on linebacker last year. So I don't see it likely that they're going to go off linebacker in the draft. I think they're going to avoid that. So that's at least one of my predictions. I think linebacker is going to be left alone. I think they're going to work on developing that unit some. I think they may go, if they're going to go after defense at all, I could see them going after some interior linemen or on an edge rusher, but just something going there. But I mean, I just don't see them blowing up the linebacker unit when they just spent it last year, because that just seems unlikely. So an interior defensive line and an edge defender sound much better. This could be a team that could go after Jadeveon Clowney. I think that could be a good unit to add to this team. Maybe Carl Lawson, someone like that to be able to.
Well, Carl Lawson was on the Bengals, if you remember, for the first half of the year until he was traded to the Seahawks. I do not think Carl Lawson will be returning to Cincinnati next season.
I know. Their arguments for trying to get him back too. And if they could help having him a little bit back on this team, would that improve it? Because this D-line is simply terrible.
No, and they have a ton of cap space. They have the 6th most cap space in the NFL. Joe Burrow is their 5th highest played player.
Cleveland is 4 spots behind them, and they made the playoffs.
So, I mean, you think of what this team could do in free agency if anyone wanted to come to Cincinnati, but I just don't think that's going to be the case. That's the one thing is I just don't see anyone watching this Cincinnati team and go, now maybe, I mean, if they offer enough money to some of these guys will say, hey, I mean, for $20 million, if you're going to overpay me, I'll play in the middle of Antarctica in the winter. But for a lot of these free agents, you know, they're going after wins and championships. And I don't think Cincinnati is anywhere close, nor have they demonstrated that they even have the potential as a franchise to get anywhere close to that. So at this point, you're looking at building through the draft. So you're going to have to flip some of these guys. I think Geno Atkins is beyond flipping at this point, though. What are you going to get back for him? He's going to be a
not very much.
He's just going to be a cap.
You know how much they're going to save getting rid of him?
$10 million.
And that's what I like to hear. And that's the thing.
Who are you going to use it on? That's the thing.
But it's better than having nothing. So at least I see them coming out of here. But yeah,
that franchises like the Bengals, they have to operate almost under the radar. They have to go and be able to draft a starting caliber linebacker in the fifth round or the fourth round. But they have to draft well, and they have to get under the radar free agents that maybe other teams don't want or are not willing to pay as much that are going to produce for them and play efficient football. But when's the last time we saw a big name free agent jet off to Cincinnati?
It's a trick question.
Never. So it's going to have to be some of these under the radar guys and some of these guys that are going to end up being, you know, the Jayon Browns of the world, the fifth round picks that end up being Pro Bowl linebackers.
And stuff like that is going to make it a little more complicated for this team. And one more look as we go into our draft preview. This team has the fifth overall pick, of course, in the first round, the 38th pick in the second, and the 69th pick in the third round, which is a pretty good setup for this unit. Overall, 8 picks in the draft. So with that first overall pick, again, Sewell is the guy you got to say they have to go for. Though, again, I just don't believe that he's going to be available then. I just cannot comprehend how Sewell's not going to go off.
Joe Burrow should request a trade if the Bengals don't pick an O-lineman in the top five. It doesn't matter if you think Rashawn Slater might be better off at pick number 11 and maybe you can get a different player at number five. No, if you're Joe Burrow, you should request a trade if they do not pick an offensive lineman.
If Sewell's off the board in the top four picks, do you trade down and get an lineman? Because I think the answer is also yes. Because
someone in the back half of the top 10 is 100% going to take a quarterback. There are too many teams that don't have their long-term answer at quarterback and too many quarterbacks that are polarizing yet exciting in this draft. So one of those teams is going to get greedy and bite. And I think in order to get ahead, someone may be a trade-up candidate to that number five spot. And if Penei Sewell is off the board, but if Penei Sewell is still on the board, they should run their draft card in. They should legitimately like sprint to the podium before the clock even starts.
I think that's going to be about as easy of a pick right there as you can possibly get. We'll see if that ends up happening. Because of course, we have no idea if they're going to be competent enough to do that, though I sure would hope so. But yeah, Rashawn Slater is probably your number two offensive tackle right there. He's projected around the number 12 spot. Christian Darrisaw at 16 is slightly lower, as well as Elijah Vera Tucker rounding out the top 20 overall picks. So with that, that's going to be all I got here for our first episode of the exit interviews of the Blank Coverage Podcast for the 2020-2021 season and leading into the 2021 draft. Of course, we will have a draft preview set up for the weekend before the draft day, which is going to be quite a while from now, which is why we're only starting out with our first division here. It's about, I think, 8-ish, 9-ish weeks away. We have a lot of time before then. We're still rounding out February. This will probably be actually, I think, our last February episode, or if it releases in March, not sure. Either way, we all love having you here listening in, tuning in to us at the Blanket Coverage Podcast here for our exit interview specials. It's Jack Wallace signing off.
and Noah Parker signing off as well. And to quote my least favorite words to hear as a journalist, this interview is over.
Peace out, y'all.